Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, college football fans across the nation and around the world. This is Tim May with the Tim May Podcast. And when I'm addressing college football fans, I'm addressing you today for sure, because I have an interesting guest on, Dr. Darren W. White of Samford University. He's the executive director for the University Center for Sports Analytics. He's a professor there, and he's chair of the Entrepreneurship Management and Marketing Department. He's also the founding coordinator of the Sports Marketing and Analytics Program in Samford's Brock School of Business. Yeah, that's a lot of titles, but this guy deserves most of them, probably all of them. He's probably laughing right now at me saying that. But what he and his group have put together is a poll of college football fans across the nation to determine really who has the most fans out there. And no surprise, you know, Ohio State being maybe number two to Alabama in the first preseason poll of the year going into the 2022 season. They may be number two to Alabama in that poll, but they're number one in a poll of number of fans in the country, followed by Alabama, which I'm sure comes to no surprise to, like I said, those folks who populate Buckeye Nation, probably the largest nation in the country now. I think you can probably brag on that. But he and I get into those numbers. Why that's interesting. Well, it's obviously it's interesting to you folks, but why it was interesting to him to kind of come up with those numbers. He grew up and is still a huge Alabama fan, but he didn't let that skew his deciphering of the data. And then following that, I've got a nice conversation with a man that I've known for several decades. He's been working as, in essence, the high school liaison with high school coaches, et cetera, for the Ohio State football program, especially in the recruiting aspect of things since 2015, Ed Terwilliger. Before that, he was a high school coach for 34 years and 35 years, including the last 24 at Olentangy before taking that job with the Buckeyes in 2015. And he's continued, and he's got a lot of experience, some interesting stories to tell about his time growing up through the ranks as both a coach and then now being behind the scenes with Ohio State, which has been a really intriguing kind of cap to his career. So without further ado, let's get to my conversation with Dr. Darren White of Samford University on those, in essence, stunning numbers. You'll see they get even more stunning as we go with some graphics involved also, not just where Ohio State stands in the nation, but where Ohio State stands in the Big Ten. It's going to open some eyes. Without further ado, here's Dr. Darren White. Well, ladies and gentlemen, like I promised, I mean, this is a man who has become an expert on fandom, college football, college athletics, but mainly college football fandom across the United States. Dr. Darren White from Samford University, thanks for joining the Tim May Podcast.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Just can't wait to talk college football. Is there anything better to talk about than that, right?
No, there is not. There is not. You know, and then when you get the fan aspect of it into it, which is what really separates college football from any other sport in the world, you know, that's when it really gets cool. But I wanted to make sure people understand you've got credentials here. You're the executive director for Samford University Center for Sports Analytics and the Margaret Gage Bush well, my screen just went blank. It was so long. The Margaret Gage Bush Distinguished Professor. And, man, I really appreciate you coming on my podcast because, like I said, you didn't just throw these numbers out in front of a fan and picked up the pieces. You guys did research on this, right?
Yeah. We're Samford University. Yeah, we're the first university in the world to have a center dedicated to sports analytics specifically, which is really cool. You know, data has become a huge thing in sports nowadays, not only on the money ball, you know, coaching side of things, but also really on the business side of things. And this data that we collected related to college fandom really kind of falls into that camp. And so, we do a lot of this kind of stuff. So,
well, without further ado, though, let's get to the main reason I called you because it's not the main reason, because I would have been interested, just as interested, maybe more so, if Ohio State was number 10 on your list of top 10 college fandoms across the country. But What did you and your colleagues, what did your findings reveal?
Yeah, so we every year we do, we partner with a company called SBRNet, which is a marketing research firm, and we survey thousands of people across the country and really just to learn about their fandom across all sports. And so year after year, though, we've been doing this since 2017, we keep seeing at every single year, Ohio State keeps coming in year after year as the number one team in the nation in terms of number of fans. Yeah. And this past year, we did the survey back in January of 2022. We were estimating that Ohio State was over 6 million total fans, in the United States of America, which is, again, number one. Number two was my team, Alabama. But we're pretty far distant number two. You know, we were about 1.5 million-ish behind Ohio State in terms of total fandom. And so that's it's pretty cool data.
What do you, by the way, I think if I remember correctly, also you know, Michigan State, Penn State, Michigan State, and Michigan made that list also in your top seven, right? I mean, which is Big Ten teams, et cetera. I'm trying to remember the order they came in there. Do you remember?
So Ohio State 1, Alabama 2, Penn State 3, then Notre Dame, then Texas, then Michigan State. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So Michigan State came in 6th.
Yeah.
Michigan was next, which is interesting. Michigan State was ahead of Michigan.
Yes.
And you had Georgia. And Georgia has really shot up a lot in the last few years. And then you had Florida State. That was your top 10 as of this year. So, yep.
How much in those numbers? Obviously, Big Ten, a lot of these Big Ten schools have gargantuan alumni bases. As Ohio State calls it, you know, they call it Buckeye Nation. Just right. Their alumni base plus their fandom. But were you surprised by what the numbers told you about Ohio State and Alabama, or did that kind of correlate with what you probably figured it would be?
Yeah, it you know, you're right. The fact that the size of the alumni base is a lot. And then also where the team is located. And one of the things that Ohio State has going for them is the part of the country that Ohio State is in. For example, Alabama down here, there are so many teams that are nationally ranked year after year. So we kind of divide up the population down in the South, whereas Ohio State pretty much owns that part of the country other than in Michigan State. But with the success that Ohio State has had over the last decade to 15, 20 years, that's really what's driving so much of it. In fact, when you dive in the data a little deeper, what you'll see is that Ohio State performs extremely well with Generation Z, which is your 25-ish and under crowd.
Wow.
And if you think about why, because those are all people who, as they were growing up, Ohio State was just a household name. They were year after year in the playoffs and all that. And so, you know, within the Big Ten, particularly, Ohio State owns Gen Z, which is great for the future, by the way. So that's what every brand out there, your Coca-Colas, your you know, you name it, that's who they want. And Ohio State has that group right now for sure. So
and Alabama has a pretty good chunk of that too, right? I mean, the Gen Z.
Yeah, they do. Because again, same thing. They're year in, year out. They're in the conversation, and so. That's great news going forward for both of those teams.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? We were talking about a graphic you had that showed just Big Ten fandom over the last several years, how it is, showing the teams and how they've changed one way or the other. There you go. And kind of walk us through this real quickly. You show Ohio State just stands out, for want of another term, on this graphic, right?
Yeah, so you can see right here. Can you see my cursor right there?
Yes.
Yeah, so you can see this is the red bar is 2017. The orange is 2019 and blue is 2021, which as an Alabama fan, I'm not sure why we put orange and blue next to each other, but we just did. Oh, well.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to talk to my student about that. But anyway. So you can kind of see Ohio State has been up there near about 6 million fans total, you know, for the last 6 years or so. But again, as an upward slope in terms of our curve. But if you look at our Penn State, for example, we have a real decline. If you look at Michigan, it's really had a decline. I mean, significant, decline there. They were, well over 4 million, back in 2017, but they're now down around 3 million. So they've lost almost 25% of their fandom. And again, one of the reasons they just haven't been relevant, within the national conversation, and the younger generation particularly likes to support a winner. And that's kind of how it is. Wisconsin, of course, didn't have the greatest year last year. That's part of that. Michigan State's again had a nice little incline right there. Other interesting ones is Illinois and Purdue, has seen some pretty good success recently. And so that's starting to pay dividends. And so one of the things you can tell is there's definitely a correlation with the number of fans you have and how well you're doing. And so And so that's a big part of it.
Hey, throw that other graphic up there too. The one that's really just jumps out at you about Ohio State and its largesse when it comes to the, especially its brethren in the Big Ten. It's just, that's just, you know, I think the colors really set it off, but it's just, it's kind of stunning when you see it in numbers, isn't it? Or in graphic form.
Yeah, you're talking. Let me see if I'll have to pull it up real quick. I think I accidentally closed it down.
That's all right, man.
Yeah, I can get it really quickly here, though. But yeah, we do. And by the way, if you want to, if you guys are interested in this sort of data, if you follow me on Twitter, we are constantly posting this kind of content. We've done this for all the Power Five schools. We don't only do it for college football, we do it for NFL. So check out the Center for Sports Analytics. You can Google it and find it, or you can find me on Twitter. I'm Sports Biz Prof. On Twitter, but let me see if I can find that for you. But
sports,
we're
Sports Biz Prop. BIZPROF.
What? Yeah, sports and then underscore biz underscore and then prof.
P-R-O-F. Gotcha.
And so you can follow. We're constantly putting out this kind of fun data. But all right, here we go. I think I have found it. There it is, Fan Graphs. All right, go Big Ten. I think that was, you're talking about the, oh yeah.
Yeah.
You're talking about that one. Yeah. All right, here we go.
Okay. This is,
so check this out. So yeah, basically what this is showing us is that if you take everybody in the country that supports a Big Ten team, of the Big Ten teams, 23, so roughly one out of every four fans that is a fan of a Big Ten team is a fan of Ohio State, which is just, again, dominant. You know, I mean, there's not another conference that has a team that is that top heavy within the conference.
Not even the SEC.
No, I mean, because again, in the SEC, we have, you know, you've got, I mean, Alabama has a really strong fan base, but so does Georgia.
Yeah.
You know, and so does Tennessee. And so, you know, Alabama is dominant, but not that dominant, you know, within the conference. And so so you see Penn State right there at 15%. So again, there's your number. So they're right at 4 million fans as compared to 6.27. So that's over 2 million more fans that are Ohio State fans versus Penn State. There's your Michigan State, there's your Michigan, and then kind of on down the line. And then you got your poor Northwestern with only 400,000 fans.
It is what it is.
But
it
yeah, is you what know, it is. Right, there you go. But
can I ask you this though?
Yeah.
Did any of those Ohio State numbers, were they stunning to you when y'all kind of got into it, or did you sort of expect it to be there? Because, you know, Michigan's always been known basically as having this brand about it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think if this had been done maybe back in the 70s or 80s, it might have been a lot different. But I don't know. Just what were you stunned a little bit by the Ohio State numbers?
Yeah, a little bit, and mainly because you hear, you know, what number one, it's extremely hard to get a feel for the size of the fan base. That's a difficult number to get at.
Yeah.
And so one of the ways that people try to estimate that is based on licensed merchandise sales. And so, you know, people look at like, well, how many Michigan shirts were sold versus whatever. Well, again, I don't know how much you want to go into it, but most of your big schools, the licensing rights are through a company called Learfield, which is a company out of Atlanta. Their senior vice president of license is actually on my board. I know him very well. And so Michigan, you know, and Alabama and all these schools, they are part of Learfield. Well, Ohio State actually does all that in-house. So they're one of the few schools in the country that actually runs more like a pro franchise, because pro teams keep all of that stuff. Most of the revenue generating functions in a pro sports organization are actually done in-house. College, not so much. Most of it's outsourced. And so this is an example. But Ohio State, on the other hand, they actually do it in-house. So a lot of those numbers we don't actually get to see in the public. So that may be one reason why there's this feeling that Michigan is just so dominant, because we really don't get those sorts of numbers for Ohio State, because so much of that is done in-house. And so,
gotcha.
I don't know if that long way around to answer your question.
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't even, you know, I like to present, you know, when I got a guy like you, and I like to let you know kind of like where I'm coming from beforehand and give you a few questions, et cetera. But I wanted to ask you this out of left field a little bit. You know, you saw where the Big Ten has added USC and UCLA starting in a couple of seasons. What does that, you know, if you even like run that through your head, because your head's always working, I'm sure it's a computer that never shuts down. Is that what does that mean to the Big Ten, do you think, down the road from a footprint standpoint? And what does it How does it enhance Ohio State's footprint, do you think?
Yeah. Oh, it's huge because it's all about the world of sports is all about eyeballs. I mean, that's what it all boils down to. It boils down to how many eyeballs are watching your team and watching your sport. So revenue generation is a function of eyeballs. And that's as basic as it gets, right?
Yes.
And so the more eyeballs we can get on our sport and on our team, the better. The more revenue we're going to generate, the more that will then translate to success on the field. And again, that's true globally. That's true. That's not just college football, right? And so, so the fact that now Ohio State will be playing games year after year after year, and you'll have the California market, particularly the LA market, you know, tuning in, wanting to watch, have a reason to watch. If Ohio State continues to have the kind of success they've had over the last 10 or 15 years, you're going to end up finding 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years down the line, a lot of the new generation, even in California, will be pulling for Ohio State. And that's kind of what happens.
And it's quite impressive how many just Ohio State alumni live in the Southern California area. It's a huge, huge number, you know, like 25,000, 28,000 and stuff. Yeah. I wanted to ask you this, though, with the Southeastern Conference adding Oklahoma and Texas, basically the two brand names from the Big 12. What do you think about these two conferences now that are going to be going head to head, so to speak, for national championships, but also for viewers and stuff? From your data, does it look like they've positioned themselves very well for the future?
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. And again, we live in the heart of SEC land, here in Birmingham. I think I mentioned to you, we were talking earlier. I mean, for the longest time, my next door neighbor was the commissioner of the SEC.
Yes.
Mike Slive. And he was a good friend of ours. He actually helped us quite a bit with the launching of our program at Samford, and many times came out and spoke on campus. So he's a good friend of mine. So we're all about SEC football here in Birmingham, but there's no doubt that the SEC and the Big Ten have sort of positioned themselves as the, if you think way back to the AFC and the NFC and the NFL days.
Yes.
Yeah. This is kind of what you're seeing, this sort of moving in that direction, particularly with NIL and how NIL is changing everything. I mean, absolutely everything. And so no doubt that these are the two conferences that are setting themselves up to be the dominant, they are basically college football going forward. I mean, they really are. And I mean, 10 years from now, it'll be very interesting to see if we even still have I don't think we'll have a Big Five any longer. We'll have a Big Two.
Yeah. Yes.
And then there's everybody else.
Yeah.
And so, so no doubt that they're, they're, because again, at the end of the day, if you think about it, if it's all about eyeballs, and and so the more eyeballs you got, the more revenue you got. Well, the more revenue you got, the more NIL money you can spend on your team and on your players. So it just makes sense that as this thing plays out, that's kind of where this is all going to go. And it's not just NIL money, it's also sponsorship revenue. It's all the revenue streams. The meteorite dollars are going to be much bigger for those two conferences versus others. So, it's just many millions of dollars more flowing into those conferences long term compared to others. And that's what it boils down to.
Yeah. It's like getting bigger tributaries to serve your big river. It's like, and by the way, Mike Slive, I mean, it's just so cool. You're your next door neighbor, right down, and then tell everybody, as you told me, I think your first teaching gig at Alabama, after you got your degrees and stuff, you had a youngster, a real go-getter walk-on football player in one of your classes there. And his name was,
His name was, and again, I was teaching. I was really young. It was my first class ever as a marketing class I was teaching. And he sat on the back row. And every time I'd go to the game, I'd look to see if we could find him or whatever. And he never played. I mean, never. He was a walk on, all that. But anyway, I remember it because he had a really strange name. His first name was Dabo. So I literally tell everybody like, Dabo's like he's an incredible recruiter. It's like, I taught him all the marketing he knows. So
bingo. Bingo. Hey, by the way, did he show up for class every day? Let's get the
He was a great student, a super young man. And I say young, he was like literally like 2 years younger than me, I think.
Exactly. That's great. Sit down and shut up, kid.
He was, of course, he grew up here in Birmingham. He's from Pella. Right. I don't know if you know his story, but he had a pretty rough go of it growing up with his mom and all that. But no, he's just a fantastic human being. I mean, unbelievable. And he comes back to Birmingham pretty often, actually. That's really fun. I'll tell you one other fun story. When I moved into the house I'm in right now, I did not know that Mike Slive was my next door neighbor. I had no idea. And so that night, the first night we'd gotten here, someone knocked on my door, and I opened the door, and there's the commissioner of the SEC standing in my door with his wife, Liz, holding a plate of chocolate chip cookies, homemade. Wow. And Mike was wearing his pajama bottom pants with little SEC logos on them. And I'm looking at him going, and he says, "Welcome to the neighborhood. I'm your next door neighbor." And I'm like, "What? You're the commissioner of the SEC."
Wow. What a neighborhood.
And he was just an amazing human being. Absolutely. Yeah. The nicest person you've ever met. I mean, so unassuming. I mean, he did so much to help us. I mean, just a great, great guy. So.
Hey, Dr. White, I want to ask one last thing before we get out of here. I like calling when you got degrees like you've got to give you some cred, you know. Yeah. Last thing I wanted to ask you about this, when you look at these numbers and you look at where the things are going from the SEC and the Big Ten realm, how much pressure do these numbers put on those head coaches? You understand what I'm saying? I mean, because like you just said, the graph of the Big Ten, it kind of slides, whatever, based on success, really. I'm sure it's, you're a longtime Alabama fan. I grew up going to Alabama games I went to Alabama Anonymous and kind of got some of that out of me. But the bottom line is Alabama's not always been up there, you know, in between Bear and Gene Stallings, between Gene Stallings and Nick Saban, you know, there were some dips and stuff. But how much pressure can you almost see the pressure through those numbers on like a Ryan Day and a Nick Saban?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, college football is becoming more and more like pro sports for sure. And you know how it is in pro sports. I mean, their coaches, I think the average NFL coach, I was just looking at this the other day, the average tenure of an NFL coach is like 3.2 years or something like that, you know. And then there are even leagues like in Europe, for example, you'll have a coach come in and last 10 games.
Yeah.
And then they'll fire him because you absolutely have to continue to win ball games. And it's just crucial if you're going to continue to draw the fans, which ultimately is tied to revenue. And that's and again, sports wasn't always this way, right? I mean, it used to be this way, but it is how it is now. And it's the way it's going to be. It is a business. It's about revenue. It is how it is. And so, which is, by the way, while we started our program in sports business and the business school at Sanford, we were the very first business school in the South to have a program in sports marketing. We started it back 10 years ago. And you're seeing more and more business schools even starting programs like ours, because if you want to work in sports, be it college sports, pro sports, you need to have a business background, because it is about revenue generation. And so,
yeah, I mean, in your lifetime, you've seen sports go literally, and I have too, from being this thing to root for and stuff, and a cool, cool thing to be a part of, to an industry. I mean, it is an industry as much as almost any other industry across the world now, right?
That's the textbook that I use in my class that I'm about to start teaching. So we have at Sanford, we've got, not only do we have an undergrad program in sport business, we also have an MBA. We're the first school in the South outside the state of Florida with a sport business MBA. So it is. I mean, that's just how the industry is. It just kind of a fun background. The very first business school to start a program like this was the University of Oregon back in 1999 with Nike money.
Phil Knight, yeah.
And again, one other little fun note, Rich McKay, the president of the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah.
He's actually on our advisory board. So I know Rich, and I was actually talking with him a few years ago, and I was like, how did we get here? How did we get to where we are now? And according to Rich, he thinks a lot of it goes back to Jerry Jones and the Cowboys, in the sense that Jerry Jones was really the first NFL owner, or first pro sport owner, period, to kind of show the power of the brand, the ability to drive tremendous revenue outside of just gate revenue, right?
Yeah.
And Jerry Jones did that. And when he did it, it started putting pressure on all your other NFL teams. Because back in the day, in fact, Rich used to say this, back when he was at the Tampa Bay Bucks, he said they would get 85% of their revenue would come from the NFL just from media rights dollars.
Yeah.
You know, and nowadays most NFL teams generate the vast majority of their income, you know, is done internally. So that then spread across all sports and now even into college sports. And so it's pretty amazing how this industry's changed in the last 20 years, honestly.
Absolutely. Hey, the players are even getting to get a little bit of money now above the table, right?
Yeah. And you knew that was coming.
Yeah.
You knew that was eventually going to happen. So that's But yeah, it's a fun industry to be in though. And if so, if you're a high school student out there and you're trying to figure out what to go study, I mean, you ought to look for a school somewhere that's got a sport business MBA or sport business undergrad program, because it's a fun industry to work in. I mean, it really is. There's no industry like it. I mean, I tell people all the time, you can go work at Regions Bank and, you know, you make a lot of money. Yeah. But if you work for a pro sports team or a college, you get to be part of the team. So even if you're selling tickets or an accountant or whatever, I mean, like the Braves, for example, we have a mentorship partnership with the Braves. Every one of those executives has a World Series ring. Every one of them feel like they won the World Series.
Yes. Dr. Darren White, I appreciate you joining me, my man.
Yeah.
Our time's run out, but I'm going to have you on again, I mean, many times, because I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Yep. Sounds good. I appreciate it. And again, check out on Twitter if you want to see some of this data. I'll be posting it out there for you.
Well, I appreciate Professor White coming on with me. We're going to get together a few more times down the road, because, you know, the more you crunch the numbers, the more crunching you want to do. And as we pointed out there near the end, you know, sports has gone from like being something you cheer for to being a major industry, not just in the United States, but around the world. But especially when it comes to major college football and, of course, the NFL, which dwarfs every other aspect of the industry out there. So let's move on to my conversation with Ed Terwilliger. Like I said, he and I have known each other for several decades, in part because he used to run the Ohio High School Football Coaches Association All-Star Game, which I covered for many years when I was at the Columbus Dispatch. And I've always found him to being an engaging, affable man. And you'll see what I'm talking about as we get into our conversation. Without further ado, here's Ed Terwilliger.
Ed Terwilliger, welcome to the Tim May Podcast, man. Long time I'm trying to make this happen, and we finally hooked up.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. I know it's different to go back and think about, you know, 30 years ago and everybody, all of us starting out here in Central Ohio doing our thing with, you know, high school football and everything you did with the Dispatch and everything. So it's an honor, to be honest with you. It's pretty much a,
well, you know, I don't want to really talk about that stuff as much as I want to talk about, you know, your role with Ohio State, how you got into this and stuff, because we're in the bowels of the Ohio State coaching staff meeting room areas. And but you know, you were the Educator of the Year in the Olentangy School District back in 2006-2007. You had a way of getting your point across, correct?
Well, I think the one thing, longevity helps, surrounding yourself with great people. And I think if you look at the people that have worked with me, and I don't like to use the term under me, but we're assistant coaches. I mean, the Steve Hales, the Zeb Schroeders, the Tim Dalps at Otterbein. I mean, all those guys were assistants for me. So I think the same thing goes in the classroom. I had one philosophy when the last thing I told any of the guys that I hired was that I felt like I don't want my kid to have a bad teacher. And in the Olentangy School District, there's no reason to have a bad teacher. So I don't want any other kid to have one. So you got to do your job in the classroom first if you want to be able to be a football coach here.
Yeah, a lot of people aspire to that, but then to be recognized for it had to be a thrill, right?
Well, I mean,
as big an award you've ever won.
Yeah, without a doubt. No, you know, other than having your kids born, you know, that's probably, you know, right there with it. So I can't lie, and they knew before I did too. So that made it even, you know, better when they all knew.
But showed up at the ceremony. Well, let's jump into that. I mean, you know, you were an established, really well-respected high school football coach in Central Ohio and stuff. You helped produce Joshua Perry. Yeah. You didn't, you know, you weren't the only one responsible, so to speak. His mom and dad had a little bit to do with that. Yeah. But when you got a chance, an offer from Ohio State to come and just be part of the mix here in whatever form or fashion, how did that strike you, I guess?
Well, I think a lot of things fell into place. You know, timing's everything. I was fortunate enough to be where I was at for a long period of time with a lot of great people. And we had a lot of good players. And, you know, most people don't realize we had over 100 players in my career go to play college football at Olentangy. So, you know, Joshua, obviously, everybody knows, and he's still making a name for himself in your industry.
Yeah.
But, we had 5 kids go to the league, you know. And that's pretty good. So, you know, you got some pretty good players. And, you know, Kenny Onaniki and Josh and You know, they're just some really good people. And Zach Karen's a kid that most people don't know about. He's probably had the most, he played like 5 years in the league, you know, so it was all good. But timing, I felt like the program was a good position. I think everybody that goes into it say they'd like to leave it better than when they found it. I don't know how bad it was when I found it, so it was not a big deal. I just felt like at that point we had great numbers. We had a full staff of educators. And we had just come off a regional playoff loss to Hilliard Davidson, you know, and I just felt like at that point it was time. I didn't want to be the guy to hang on, and I wanted everybody to say, you know, respect, I think, is a big word you use. And the other thing that got me is I actually had been offered a couple positions, not at Ohio State, but with other universities. You know, you got to know a lot of the coaches. And so I started thinking about what I wanted to do to life after being a head coach of football. Recruiting was always important to me. And I didn't care whether it was going to be a junior college kids that went to California or Joshua who ended up at Ohio State. Really because I would not be here if it wasn't for my head football coach in high school. I'm a Nelsonville, York graduate. Dave Boston is a Hall of Fame coach. You know, back in our day, you know, it wasn't like recruiting is now. And you had to try to find, you know, a niche, and I had no idea. I mean, first person in my family to ever go to college. So, you know, he got me where I was at, and that allowed me to end up becoming a teacher in a high school football.
Yeah, where'd you end up going to college?
OU. I was at the Ohio University.
The Ohio University. You know,
not the OU out in Norman, so.
Yeah,
But it was great, and those things always play into – it would be remiss for me not to – to let everybody know, you know, Dave Boston was a Hall of Fame coach. All right, Ed Bolin and Paul Culver are the two guys I started with. They're both in the Hall of Fame at high school. And Vern Long at Westlake and Tom McDonald. So everybody that I was under was a phenomenal coach, all different. You learned everything in a different manner. And then basically when I got my opportunity, I wanted to take what I felt were all the positive things that they incorporated. And then, of course, put my own niche to some of the things. I'm like, there's no way I'm ever going to do that,
right? Yeah.
You know,
because
I'm not that, you know, that kind of person. So, but then when I got to, I also was one of those dummies that said, don't complain about a problem, jump in and try to fix it. So I got involved with the Ohio High School Coaches Association. So I was an officer for 16 years, and that through those 16 years, I ended up going into the presidency, which is a 4-year. And I always joke. I said, Coach Meyer hired me. He really didn't want me. He really wanted my cell phone, you know, with 716 high school football coaches, cell numbers in it, that just in the state of Ohio.
Method to the madness.
Exactly.
Is what you're
saying. So, you know, the psychology part of it.
But that says something about what Urban thought about recruiting, right? I mean, what he thought about making those links, et cetera.
Well, I think recruiting, you know, that's the name of the game, you know.
Yeah.
You know, we all know that the better players you have, the better coach you are. And that's you know, and then the better players, the better coach, the better program. Better program, the better, you know, you multiply it. But it all starts with who you bring into your locker room and the culture within your locker room.
And let's just get into this real quick. I mean, you know, you brought in and Ohio State, and are you wondering what really your role was going to be, or was it kind of defined once you got there?
It was a process, and quite honestly, I think Mark Pantone, I owe a great deal to, because Mark was instrumental in, you know, I came in here with the idea, it's like, look, whatever, what can I do? You know, I don't know. I'm not a college coach. I'm not a college X and O guy.
Yeah.
I think I understand high school recruiting, and I understand parents because, you know, that's always something you have to deal with, in, you know, as a high school coach. And,
yeah.
And my philosophy is always I want to be dealing with the parents. I don't shun them, put a brick wall up, and do everything like that. Be honest and upfront, and let them know where they're going to be. And I think Mark just kind of sat back, and I did a lot of dumb stuff. I mean, I ran around and checked. I looked at grades, checked classes, talked to kids, got to know them good. I mean, I was just trying to absorb be the sponge to absorb the knowledge of what was going on, and then get a feel
and
for
how best you could help.
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, hey, look. You need another body to show people around. Yeah, I mean, I'm here. You know, it's like, and I think at that point, one day, you know, Mark brought me in, and Coach, he said, Coach Meyer wants to talk to you. And So I would be remiss to not thank Mark. And still to this day, he keeps elevating everything here within this department, you know.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? So,
yeah.
I mean,
because people look at it and say, you know, a lot of people say, what's your title? And I say, well, you know, titles are, you know, whatever thing. But, you know, my title is Director of High School Relations for Football. Slash,
yeah.
You know, and then it's slash, which is okay because,
yeah.
You know, I think there's some things that I'm okay at, which is my personality, and then there's other things that the young guys come in and are good at. But, you know, Mark's taking this, we're more like, I would say we're more like an NFL general manager type situation with him and director, you know, with our new people, with director of recruiting, director of creative recruiting, our guys that are recruiting assistants, and then my title. And, you know, there's lots of hats that get worn by everybody. But I will tell you this. One thing, all the hats go off when the recruits walk in the building, everything else drops.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think.
But, yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you. I mean, it's like, I don't know. What did you learn immediately about this place once you were on the inside? You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. As a high school coach, yeah, you could come and visit. You could, you know, Josh Perry was getting recruited.
Oh, yeah.
You could be around. But what was it that you learned about just the Ohio State football program from the inside without giving away secrets?
Yeah,
but,
it's not. I don't think there's. It's not a secret. Take care of detail.
Yeah.
Very take care of detail.
Which matched what you were all about to begin with, right?
Well, hopefully. And even then, I got, you know, you became more obsessed with it, you know.
Yeah.
You know, my probably the I'm much better at picking the phone up and calling to talk to mom and dad than I am in texting and, you know, all the social media stuff and things like that. So I think you got to play to your strengths.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing I was a little bit different than the others. You know, a lot of guys were using technology and recruiting and everything, but eventually, as you want to know, somebody's going to walk through the door.
Yeah.
And when they walk through the door, that's game on.
Yeah.
And I'm not gonna lie, I like that. You know, I like that part.
And that's what's got me about you guys from a recruiting standpoint. I'm talking about you guys, Ohio State, under Mark Pantone especially. These coaches, when they walk in the door, like the assistant coach, when they walk in the door, they're loaded, right, with information. That takes a lot of work, right? To compile things to where you can talk almost personally with somebody as opposed to getting to know them, if you understand what I'm saying.
Correct.
In other words, you already know this guy walking in.
Right.
Your big deal is for them to get to know you. I'm talking about the coaches, et cetera. But a lot of you guys in the support area of the recruiting aspect, y'all are involved in that, right?
That's what we all do.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the biggest change is, you know, in our age group, you know, we could go all the way back to VCRs, you know, DVDs, you know, the whole bit and everything. Now, the information overload is out there all over the place. But, you know, Coach Day is a phenomenal manager, right? He knows, he has a plan. He knows what his plan is. And, you know, he lets everybody know exactly what that is and what your expectations are.
Yeah.
And once again, you know, I know a lot of coaches want X and O and draw. And I mean, I used to have guys on my staff like that. And I'm like, you know, you guys can go draw all you want. I said, I worry about whether he's going to pass science and be eligible.
Yeah.
All right. And Coach Day's like, you know, recruiting is it. You know, you have to recruit your position and your area and make sure that you're involved with everybody.
How glad are you that you made this move? Meaning, you know, you could go through your life, you know, wondering about things, you know what I mean? About how does it really work? I mean, you think you know, but do you really know? You know what I mean? I mean, how, I guess, thankful are you that as you look back on it, that you made this move that many years ago?
I'm very blessed, you know, and I think that I want to pay forward. And I think that's something that I've always wanted to be able to do is make sure that, you know, what I do is going, whether, you know, I'm here 1 year, 2 years, whatever, you know, that the players that come through the door and the parents that are coming here, you had something to do with getting good people in and keeping it. You want to be better and you want to be successful in the team mode.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's not a, you know, you just don't want to be about me. It's not about me. But as far as being fortunate enough to be in a position, And I think a lot of times, there's a lot of people along the way that helps you. I mean, I wouldn't have been here if someone would have said, hey, Ed, you need to get involved with the Coach Association. And then once I was involved with the Coaches Association, it's like, hey, you need to do this. You know, I ran the North-South game. So, you know, I did different things politically. And in doing so, you got to meet so many people outside the area. The other thing most people realize is how fortunate I was to be in the OCC. You know, when I started Olin Tangi, I mean, you know, we were a little BAC team playing out in Licking County all the time. And, you know, we got to move into the OCC, which is what we wanted because we knew we were going to grow. And I wanted it, too. I just didn't expect to be a Division III school that got thrown in with Arlington and Davidson and Reynoldsburg. And, you know, you went
the big boys.
You went from playing, you know, a few teams over in Licking County that are your size because they're great fun. I mean, Randy Boffin has as good a program as anybody at Licking Valley. But, yeah. You know. But then all of a sudden you got seven D1 schools on, you know, with two platoon staffs and and you went, okay.
Yeah, here we go.
Yeah, it's just, you know, win enough to keep your job. That's it.
Well, what is something from your high school football coaching background?
Yeah.
That you apply, you think, every day in your work here in this support staff of the recruiting juggernaut that is Ohio State?
If there's anything that I bring to the table, because I'm not going to touch the technology part and the way that the world, if there's anything, it's the fact that as a high school teacher, I mean, teacher coach, I dealt with parents. You know, so and in my field, I dealt with a lot of parents that had been beaten up since elementary school, and by the time they got to high school, they were just so communicating with adults and the parents because the kids don't know the questions to ask. Because that's one of the things I'll get every once in a while. You know, you've got a family, and there's a 16-year-old kid sitting there that he might look like he's 20, and everything, and then I'm like, well, do you have any questions? And the parents are like, I'm like, no, first of all, he doesn't know the questions.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay for you to ask the questions because he's not old enough to know or understand. All he cares about is the bling in the hallway, you know, the photo shoot, whatever you want to say. But, and so I think if there's anything I bring to the table, it's being able to hopefully walk up to someone, introduce myself, make you feel comfortable to talk with me. And then pass that along to the next person, whether it's a position coach, another recruiting assistant, or something like that.
Yeah.
I think that's probably one of my strengths, if there is one, is to be able to deal with people like that verbally. Yeah.
That was the Woody Hayes secret, too, win the parents.
Oh.
You know what I mean? And the kids got to go where the parent, you know, yeah.
My senior parents laughed every year in my spring speech because they all knew they were going to hear, listen, I know that every dad in here can do, you know, more football than I do, and they can grill better than I can.
Their third down calls are on point.
You know what?
Yeah.
But as long as all you moms are happy, I'm happy because, all you know, you're going to control, you know. That's just the way it is.
Do you feel like that you're in the midst of one of the great programs ever? I mean, when you look at college football right now.
Right. And what a great time to be start in it and now to where it's going.
Right.
You know, first of all, Gene Smith had a great vision and put himself where he knew he could be in that vision. And for us to know, you know, the changing of the conferences, the NIL stuff, and where football is going. But when you talk about a great, we were talking the other day with people, and they're like, well, you know, we know we're supposed to win every game.
Yeah.
Brian Day is awesome, by the way. He never denies it. Our players know it. It's on the table. Nothing's transparent here, right?
Yes.
So, you know, we go, you know, 4 years ago, we know we're supposed to be the team up north to win the conference and win the national championship. So it's like, you know, what, 4 years ago, we beat team up north, win the conference, go out, win the Rose Bowl. Come back, you guys are 12-1.
Yeah.
You know, then next year you beat team up north, win the conference, you know, go out to the Cotton Bowl, beat USC in the Cotton Bowl, you come back, you guys are 12-1. Okay, next year, okay, now we beat team up north, win the conference, get it in the Final Four, beat Clemson, all right, we lost the national champ.
Yeah.
Not a bad year.
Not a bad year by any stretch.
Yeah, but, you know, and then you do that again the next year. And the expectations are there. And we know that. It's a tremendous program. There's very few programs in the country right now that can legitimately say they have a real shot at being in the Final Four, hopefully soon to be the 8 or 12 or whatever it's going to be, because it's going to have to change with the way the conferences are changing, which will allow better games for across the country. But, you know, obviously, you know, how does Nick Saban wake up every day and everybody tells him you're, you know, this and this and this? And, you know, and I was fortunate. I actually got to know, you know, Nick when, you know, I worked his camp when he was at Michigan State. And, you know, there's just different, some of the guys that were with him and all that. And, you know, but even driving in this morning, guess what was on the radio? It was the national, you know, how good is Bama?
Yeah.
And then there's everybody else. They've won. You know, because they were talking about the Heisman. You know that until, what was it? He got there. What was it?
Mark Ingram.
Ingram, first part.
Yeah.
No one had won the Heisman Trophy at Bama until Ingram.
I grew up an Alabama fan.
And now they've won five.
I grew up an Alabama fan. Yeah. I think it's quite fitting that Joe Namath, I watched him play on two good knees. When my dad took me and my little
brother. One of my best players ever. I love you.
Know, yeah, exactly. And but the bottom line is, I thought it was fitting that finally the first Heisman Trophy winner from Alabama was an African American man.
Yeah,
you know, because it took so long for
him to get there,
for an African American even to get to play football at Alabama in the early 1970s. So yeah, it's ironic. But what Nick Saban has done is
elevated it. But we talk about pressure, but you know, for him, what you think about it, because they said, you know, half since the BCS, half the national championship have gone there, you know. But back to that elite status, Dabo obviously has done it, won a couple conference, you know, won a couple national championships, and it was what Luke did last year was, you know, phenomenal, because now Cincinnati is Cincinnati. They're not going to go away.
Yeah.
You know,
I like where you said that. Cincinnati is Cincinnati.
Yeah. And they're not going to go away.
But Chili's going to stay Chili.
There you go. You know, by the way, you know the head strength coach at Cincinnati.
Who?
Is Brady Collins.
Oh, yeah.
An Olin Tangi captain with my son Andrew, who's the DFO at Toledo.
Exactly.
You know,
the tentacles.
Yeah, you know what those guys do? They text each other all the time. They're like,
So we're doing this. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I wanted to ask you. You know, as much as you're involved in day to day here and during the season, you know, we see you around a lot when we're allowed around.
Yeah.
But literally, you know, this group here that you're associated with, you're already trying to win games in 2025 and 2026.
Yeah.
I mean, the recruiting, that's what gets me, and I don't think most people understand it. It literally never stops.
No.
Jim Tressel had that great line, you know, that recruiting is like shaving. You miss one day and you look like a bum.
Yep.
I have a beard. But my point is that how do y'all keep up that relentless effort? I mean, what is the secret there?
Once again, it starts with Ryan. You know, as soon as you start to, you know, become decompressed or whatever, it's like, boom, you know, he brings something to the table that you want to step. And I think you want to be successful. You want to make him successful. You know, I want Mark Pantone to be successful. I mean, I don't care what anybody says. As soon as Mark sees a lull that everybody's tired, the drain of the month of June, you know, boom, you know, he comes in and you get fired up again. It's like, look, he knows when to push the button for you not to.
Yeah, coast.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's not what we're about.
Yeah.
You go hard until the end, and, you know, then, and I think the more you surround yourself with people that want to be like that, and gosh knows, I don't want to be the guy that slows everybody down, you know.
But from the outside looking in, and then you get here, is it more intense than you thought it was from the outside looking in? Because, you know, programs like Ohio State and Alabama, you know, there's only a few now. I'm not going to name that other program because they don't make it look easy anymore. but they almost make it look easy, too easy, when in fact you know it's not. It's, you know, it's like, there's one thing about climbing Mount Everest.
Yeah.
It's another thing about living on Mount Everest.
You lived in a state that a lot of guys want to get rid of the guy over in Texas probably about 5 years after, wish they had never done that.
Exactly.
You know,
but that's my point.
You know, it's easy to go like that.
But the intensity is ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, like we were talking about a while ago, how does it, like every day, does Ryan keep things on a pretty much an even keel? I mean, how would you explain? Even keel's not the right term.
And he reads the room.
Yeah.
No, he's a very astute at knowing, you know, when to push buttons and what to do and everything. But the probably like any great, he lays out the game plan. You know where you stand.
Yeah.
You know, do your job.
Yeah.
And, that's nothing that, whatever your job is, just do it. Do it the best you can. Be the best you know.
Slackers aren't allowed.
Slackers? No. You fight to be the best you can every day, the best of yourself. And that's something that's ingrained in us, I think,
Yeah.
Ed Twilliger, I know there's certain things I can't do, but some things I need to do, I got to do it as well as I can, you know. And that's the same whether it's, a position coach or and it's everyone here,
Yeah.
And I think that's something that, the ability to be successful go with the demands of what, you build a foundation and you keep going up,
Yeah.
You put in a poor foundation. Love our locker room, love our culture. I know people hear those terms and they think, oh yeah, right and everything, but it's real, it's real.
Last thing.
Yeah.
Current class accepted, while y'all are going after the 2023 class right
and
now.
And 24s.
Yeah, and 24s. But yeah, and 25s.
Yeah.
People keeping up. Catch up if you want to keep up. Give me, from the inside, give me a player over the last 4 years, recruiting-wise, 5 years, since you've been around especially, that when y'all got that yes, when y'all got that affirmative, where it was definitely a celebration.
Nah, you know what? I don't think that's fair to put that on one person. Because I'll be honest with you, a lot of times we got a 3-star or another guy that you were just as excited as, as getting, Dylan in the 24 class is what, or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, it's not a fair comparison.
Yeah. Sometimes getting that 3 or 4-star early in the class puts a foundation down
there
that you can't dispute. And that kid... more often than not, ends up being a pretty good football player.
Right.
But the guys that string it out are the ones that get a lot of the headlines because what else are you going to report on, right?
Yeah, I know. And it's, but I just think it's not fair to put the pressure on a kid like that.
Yeah.
There's normally a reason as to why they chose to figure it out. And then there are others that, people don't, whether it's the media or anybody.
Expectations. Says,
those guys, who are these?
Expectations.
And then you win the Big Ten, and 4 or 5 of those guys were pretty good players.
Yeah, yeah.
That you won the Big Ten with
and
you got a chance to move on. So I can't name one specific guy. Just like I don't think there's one person that does anything here, I think.
Yeah.
My I have a very small role in a very big situation.
There are so many guys now, Ed, that get into the profession, even the college coaching profession, that never spent time at the high school level and stuff. What did they miss, do you think, more than anything else? What did they miss?
Well, first of all, I think, lay a piece of paper down on the table and put all the positions and everything in there and fill it out for a practice schedule.
Yeah.
All right. It's not drawing up the X's. I think when you talk about ground up, I mean – when you're the HC, I mean you got to tell you this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
And then, it's the offensive line, it's a running back, it's a quarterback, it's a receiver, it's a tight end. Boom. Okay, it's one play. It's one. Do practice schedule periods, everything. And then I think that, and then the teaching part. There's tremendous teaching that goes on, and a lot of our the coaches, they come up just a different background. They came up as a player, an intern. A GA, position coach, from a GA to a position coach at a smaller school, and they grow that way.
Yeah.
I think in high school, you look at middle school kids and,
project.
Well, and you have to, you do that, but you're, you got guys on your staff that are single, no kids, not married, and they're like, oh, these terrible, these terrible. Like, no, just take time out. Perfect example. I got to tell you, Kyle Takovitz. Most people know, Kyle Takovitz was a tight end in 7th grade and 8th grade, and he was a 9th string tight end as a freshman.
And I
y'all had that many tight ends.
Oh yeah, wow. As a freshman, because you don't want
TEU.
We only had three linemen because every dad of the linemen told their kid to go to tight end on the first day, right?
Touch the ball, kid.
So I got nine of you. So anyways, long story short, I move. I say, Kyle, you're going to be an offensive coordinator. All right. Yeah. We won't even talk about the language used or whatever. But you're and Kyle ended up being a two-time captain of Cincinnati, played for the Bengals for 2 years, all right, had his degree in three, is with Worthington Industries now in Columbus after traveling around the country, with them.
Yeah.
And, just couldn't have, be a better person. And the best part about him, he married an All-American tennis player from Ohio State. So I'm like, Tao, you are now the second best athlete in your family,
Yeah.
But that's just a,
That's what's cool.
That's the difference about, in eighth grade.
Yeah.
Kevin Schmidt stood up in seventh grade health class and is 6'1", 159-pound beanpole and says, I'm going to go to Duke and play football. Everybody in the room laughs. Guess what? He's a Duke graduate. He left Olentangy, went down there, got a degree, went in as an outside linebacker and ended up playing center.
But that's what's the cool part is to have, in one form or fashion, an impact on
Now the difference here, difference here is we couldn't recruit because we weren't a parochial school, so we couldn't go out and do that. Within your diocese But you had to, you play the cards you're dealt. You learn to be a really good. You had to develop skill.
Yeah.
And the difference here is we can't take 10 guys in a class that are four-year projects.
Yes, exactly.
No.
Exactly.
And that's being truthful.
Yeah.
We want players, but the way the programs are in the country now, those kids are developed. You're a Texas guy. You go to Texas, that kid's been in a program for 4 years. He's had nutrition. He's had lifting. Now the problem is he better be good enough to play for you because you don't know how much better he's going to get.
Yeah, that's the point. What's interesting. When you're looking at kids that are freshmen and sophomores in high school, and you're staking sort of your future on, they're going to continue to get better.
Exactly.
That's tough, I would think, right? That's the art of this, right? Of what you guys do here.
That's here. You have to, you fill your, and everybody says you got to fill your roster. Sometimes it's use running back for, if there's four really good running backs in the state, well, guess what? We're not taking, why don't you recruit my kid? Well, we can't take, we may only have one scholarship for a running back.
Yes. Yeah,
you got to play your roll the dice and but you better know what you're doing and you better be an evaluator. And Tony Alford does a great job with that. That running back spot's become a lot like the quarterback spot.
Crazy.
You take the number one guy. How many quarterbacks do you think you can get that are five stars to go to one school?
Yeah, I know. But see, I just think this is an interesting time in Ohio State history. You look at the quarterback room a year ago. You look at it now. We're not going to get into all that
because
we promised not to do that. But it is amazing how this program is now attracting quarterbacks, big-time quarterbacks, receivers, and running backs.
Where's it start?
Yeah, exactly.
Where's it start?
The proof is in the pudding. Ryan Day, et cetera. Yeah. And it's amazing how it's just – I watched it right before my eyes because I was here. I was living up here when Woody was still the head coach.
Yeah.
And 3 yards of cloud of dust and the talent that he did not exploit offensively. Well, it's crazy now to see Ohio State lead the nation in total offense. And I thought was sort of average as a running team last year, but still led the nation in total offense. This is some of the most exciting football you'll ever see.
You have to also remember it would be terrible for this not to, when we talk about the program, the recruiting thing, would not to be include Coach Mick. Because if you'd have been out there, our guys today, I'm out there, right before we were finishing up our workout and everything. But with what Coach Mick does with our strength and conditioning program and the people he brings in, I brought up Brady Collins for example. Brady was also an assistant here.
Yeah.
So when Luke left, guess who went?
Yeah.
His tree's like this.
you know, with people oh, yeah. that are strength coaches.
I mean, I was over at Boston College when I was a volunteer assistant at the U.S. Open this year.
Yeah.
I'm parking on one of their practice fields. This is where our parking pass right. was at Boston College. And Phil Matus is there. And other yeah. a couple other guys that were here.
Mickey's nephew is a strength coach at Toledo.
Exactly. I mean, the tree, the branches and the roots are crazy here, right?
Yeah. And is it difficult? Yeah, it is difficult. I mean, I'm not, you know, this is not a place
no.
to come. The worst thing you could be a really talented, lazy person.
Yeah.
Because you would not like it here. And I think that goes with all the people that work here too.
Yeah.
You know, I just hope I bring enough to the plate.
Yeah. I'm just glad I got to talk to you about it I just wanted to get a little more insight with you.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you talking with me because you're a guy that was a well-respected high school football coach.
Well, I hope so.
Who's had a chance to get in on the inside here and just watch, you know, watch how the stew is cooked. You know what I mean? Because it's an ever-boiling pot, right?
You know, one of the most difficult things for me, Tim, is I have a lot of friends in the coaching profession. I said, and the guys are like, well, what's your job? I'm like, you know, it's really difficult
to define.
It's like, because we haven't even gotten into anything.
Your job, I think your job is best defined by three words, whatever it takes.
Awesome.
At that given moment, right? Yeah. That given day. Game day, you're running around like a chicken with his head cut off.
Yeah, you know what? And I'm okay with being the last one out of here to make sure everybody is where they need to be and our recruits and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And, you know, walking from the Blackwell into the, you know, the skull session and everything, that's great. And the young guys need to do that and
absorb it.
Yeah, and be involved with it. But you know what? I want to make sure everybody gets to the recruit room and gets to what needs to be, you know, what's
you want to see important. Smiles on faces basically at the end of the day, one way or the other, right?
Yeah, and that's just the way it, you know.
So. Ed Terwilliger, thanks for joining me on the Tim May podcast, my man.
It's always been a pleasure, you know. It's, you know, it's just different now. We used to have to pick a paper up and read it, and you know.
Yeah.
I don't know how you listen to this thing.
Well, it's just, you know, I mean, we're still recording here, as you well know, but the other point is it's like a podcast. And then in your lettermonroe.com, I'm semi-retired, but now they've pulled me back in to do a little bit more this year and stuff. And,
so should I bring up the fact that you were doing your Letter Monroe stuff, you know, 25 minutes into the, so we'll say that.
Hey, that's why we cut this short, folks.
Yeah. So the guy who told you he was going to keep you for 5 minutes.
Yes. I'm like you, man. I got demands on my time.
Yeah, that's
okay. Ed Terwilliger, appreciate it.
Awesome.
Thanks to Professor Darren White of Samford University, and of course to Ed Terwilliger, a man I see almost every other day during football season because he's around the Woody Hayes Athletic Center facility, helping do whatever he can to help make the Buckeyes a better team tomorrow than they were today. You know, and really enjoyed my conversation with him especially. But until next week, ladies and gentlemen, this is Tim May for the Tim May Podcast. We'll see you then.